It is Friday, December 14th, 2018. We're nearing the end of the year. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. This week's show,
poor Tricky Dicky Ricky Santorum announces that he is out of the running for White House chief of staff, like that was ever going to happen.
The Green New Deal continues to gather momentum. Writing in New York Magazine, Eric Levix asked the important question, is a Green New Deal possible without a revolution? Climate activists stage a laugh-in, then protest against Trump officials who went to COP24 climate summit in Poland and attempted to sell a clean coal proposal. That was going to happen. The laugh-in was awesome. That's what you heard the sound up top, too. And it was Mueller drama week all week long as Michael Cohen was sentenced. National Enquirer head flips on Trump. And the Maria Butina case gets real, shining a light on Russian ties with Republican activist Paul Erickson and the NRA. The Mueller investigation is getting ready for phase two of its investigation. This time, Mueller is investigating Trump's financial ties to Middle East dictators who are looking to influence U.S. politics. This week also, the Trump Organization rolled back Obama-era water protections, reopening small streams and wetlands to corporate contamination. The rollback is seen as a gift to the oil and gas industry. Some large-scale farmers and home builders were also quite happy. That means, just to bring it home, about 40% of the streams in Pennsylvania will now be vulnerable. Will a last-minute push to bring back net neutrality be nixed by Democrats flush with telecom cash? Well, check out DemsAgainstThe.net. That's DemsAgainstThe.net to see which Democrats have not signed on. And Mary Gay Scanlon was one of the four Democrats in PA unwilling to move to a vote. But it looks like a bunch of pressure worked. She has since changed her mind, is now supporting the attempts. And this week, of course, Chuck and Nancy did the Oval Office. Mike Pence, Mr. Roboto. Today's PA Focus, media outlets across the state are finally starting to give it to Senate Republicans for their blatant attack on our democracy by threatening not to seat Lindsey Williams. The Post-Gazette told Senate Republicans to let it go, because their fight represents a serious erosion. This is quote, represents a serious erosion, not only of good faith, but the stability of our democracy. An incoming PA House Representative Elizabeth Fiedler released a co-sponsor memo advocating for fair work week legislation for workers across the state. First you do it in Philly, then you do it across the state. That's what I like to hear. And today's last call, if you haven't checked it out yet, you should be watching National Geographic's Mars. In October, Mars Season 2 was launched, and it's just as good as Season 1. The latest episode, Episode 5, gets into corporate corruption and greed. Well worth the time. And this week, Virgin Galactic reached the edge of space with their Spaceship 2. And Richard Branson hopes that that heralds the launch of space tourism and more. And after fully recharging following his Oval Office Mr. Roboto power down, Mike Pence will be heading to Cape Canaveral for Tuesday's launch of first Air Force GPS-3 satellite atop of a Falcon 9 SpaceX rocket. Yeah. Satellite's going to help guide missiles, so make you feel all cozy inside. And according to Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, Space Force is now on its final approach. Great free will news this week, triple can release, all-day Christmas dinner, and beer and breakfast with Santa. We'll get into that in today's last call. Tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Tune in to Rick's Daily Show, 9 through 11, Monday through Friday, and thericksmithshow.com, and be sure to download his podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Go to ragingchickenpress.org, click the big blue donate button, and give us whatever you like. We are welcoming Christmas presents. Because now, with the 2018 midterm elections in the rearview mirror, we are turning our attention to communities of resistance, building power, and progressive organizing for 2020. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. The best way to do that is become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. You know, it's the end of my semester. I'm a little frazzled, I've got to admit. I've been in a grading hole now for a week, but you know, every time I come up for air, it seems like there's like some new national freaking scandal to like check out. The biggest of which, I mean, has PA origins.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Tricky Dicky, Tricky Ricky.
Oh yeah. Rick Santorum announced that he will not be working in the White House as White House chief of staff.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said,
boom! Biggest scandal of the week.
Of the week. Santorum out. Nobody knows why. Right. I'm sure it's like when he sat down for an interview with Trump. Right. He sat down and he said, and Trump said, "Okay, Rick, your name Rick or Dick? What is it? I don't know what it is. But Santorum, what the hell is that? It sounds like a disease to me. But anyways, what is it? What would your first initiative be?" And Rick Santorum thinks like, "Okay, first number one thing." No birth control in the Oval Office. And Trump was like, you're out of here.
So, I mean, I think it was a good thing on Rick's end, Santorum's end, to deny it. I mean, he'd go from working 0 days a week to working like 3 or 4 days a week at most. So, I mean, he's still making millions of dollars. So wouldn't you want to give that up?
Yeah.
I mean,
to
come on now.
Work in a circus? Sure. Circus is fun.
But no, it amazes me with this actual story with Trump's chief of staff is how no one wants to work in the White House.
Yeah, I mean seriously, who at this point who would want?
I mean, the guy they groomed for you to take over for Kelly just ghosted everyone.
Totally, like, he's like, what? I'm on vacation. He's like, he's got his vacation message up on his like his email and shit. He's got pictures like he's posting selfies from some island someplace. Like, you know,
I am returning never.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the good news is, right? It's this is going to present wonderful like opportunities for new college graduates.
Yeah,
because nobody else is going to take it.
I even put my application in hell.
Why not? Right? Why not? That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
It looks like they're going to be looking at Jared Kushner to be the chief of staff.
That'd be great. I hope so, man. I hope so.
Keep it in the family. I should have listened to myself for the beginning. Keep it in the family.
I mean, everyone is like falling around them. So they are just insulating themselves even more.
Well, it's great. If you look at this, like with the Mueller like investigation now, kind of, or it's actually the Southern District of New York, I think, investigation closing in around the Trump Organization's kind of illegal financing of campaign donations and things like this, and their role in that, and the only people that could have approved the Trump Organization spending the money to the National Enquirer in order to do this or sending it to Cohen is going to be the Trump family. So the idea to actually just consolidate the family in the Oval Office makes sense, right? I mean, everyone's together.
Yeah, it is like the Godfather.
It totally is. Look, we've said this for a long time. It's like we've said this from the beginning of the Trump administration. Like that. Like, look, if you want to understand this, you can't look at this through a political lens. You got to look it through a mob lens. That's how this is running.
Yeah, I mean, it's how they're investigating him too.
Exactly, which is how you do it, right? That's been, you know, well, let's jump to that. Let's jump to the kind of the Mueller investigation this week, because it was, we were starting to see more of actually what that investigation has produced. The stuff coming out of the Southern District of New York and stuff coming from Mueller's investigation We saw Michael Cohen getting sentenced, a pretty stern sentence for what is 3 years. We saw that now we know that the head, David, I think his name, first name was David, last name was Pecker, so fitting. Pecker, for the guy, the head of American Media Incorporated, the people from National Enquirer, they were given a kind of non-prosecution agreement basically to flip on Trump and confirm stuff with Cohen. We now know that he basically said yes. The understanding was when he met with Cohen to pay off Karen McDougal, and that they were doing it in order to prevent this from getting out into the media cycle during the campaign. So there you go. And we now know that the accountant, the longtime family accountant of the Trumps, that was running the Trump organization for years, he's also been given immunity, right? So, I mean, that's some serious, hardcore follow-the-money stuff.
And, yeah, and the crimes that, like, they're being, committed with, they're committing and getting charged with and convicted of, are like mob related crimes. They're classic money laundering crimes. And for me, like I feel like the Southern District investigation is going to be the one that brings them down, because I feel like the Trump organization is just going to have, there's not like one or two like felonies sitting here. I mean, there's probably like tons of felonies committed with this like organization, like going back years.
Yeah, I agree.
I won't be surprised if there's a mountain of just shit they uncover with the Trump organization, simply because the family became one of the most influential like players in the country. I mean, you know, you think this is one of the consequences of becoming president now. You know, decades of dealing with the Russians and Saudis is now going to be, investigated, because those are the only people who are going to give you money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't like really surprising stuff once you really look at it.
No, and I think that, you know, and what's interesting to see the kind of layers of what's coming out. It says, if you remember, throughout this investigation, the Mueller team would actually start to hand off certain aspects of what they were uncovering to other district attorneys, right? Other district offices. So, for example, this one, the Southern District of New York, all this stuff around the kind of Trump organization and that financing stuff, the Mueller team has kind of let that go, right? Let that go and said, pass it off to them, because in a sense, the argument has been, at least what people have been saying, is that it's because it wasn't the prime focus of his charge. Right. So that was the reason why they said that he held so tightly on to Manafort. Right. Because Manafort was directly connected to these people in Russia. Right. So the Russia, all the stuff that's directly connected to the Russia investigation, well, I should say almost all of it, Russia investigation has been stayed with Mueller. And then Mueller has actually kind of like been sending this off and kind of to other district attorney offices. So it's really fascinating to see that happening. Attorney General's office, I should say. Really fascinating to see the Southern District of New York handle all that stuff, because, man, they're hard nosed too as well. Those folks are no joke.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see if there's any blowback from all of this. I mean, like, I would like to say, like, the metaphor I was using, this is like the you hit the fuse box in the old cartoon with dynamite. Like, I mean, the fuse has been lit. Yeah. Like, you're not like stopping that fuse from going to the sticks of dynamite on the other end. It's just a matter of when they explode and how much collateral damage it causes. Because, I mean, they are, it looks like from any indications, they're all, looking within their ranks.
No, absolutely. And
the family is tightening and...
Well, and that's just it, right? So we've got the criminal activity that's been going on the attempt, the violation of campaign finance laws. That's one of the things that the judge in the case, the sentencing of Cohen, was really clear about, was basically saying, like, the tax evasion, the paying off of keeping people silent during a campaign to influence an election, lying to Congress, that all of these three things were basically showed an undermining of kind of core aspects of American democracy, right? That's why the sentence had to be, from the judge's perspective at least, fairly stern. Now, that was kind of what came out there. And now the Mueller investigation, you were bringing this up right before we went on, is like they're set to go in a whole other direction that, as far as I know, we have – this has not been discussed, right, publicly before Daily Beast broke this.
Yeah, so the Daily Beast broke this the other night, or last night, I think, that the Mueller investigation is looking at, going to start a second phase of it, and that's going to be looking into Trump's financial ties to Middle East dictators who are looking to influence U.S. politics.
There you go. And here's how the Daily Beast story begins. Is over the past year, the indictments, convictions, and guilty pleas have largely been connected in one way or another to Russia. But now Special Counsel Robert Mueller's office is preparing to reveal to the public a different side of his investigation. In court filings that are set to drop in early 2019, prosecutors would begin to unveil Middle Eastern countries' attempts to influence American politics, three sources familiar with this side of the probe told the Daily Beast. In other words, the Russia investigation is set to go global. So, and I think that this is squarely focused on Jared Kushner. I think that is going to be how close to home that is, since he had all those back channel dealings with a bunch of folks
in the Middle East.
Yeah. I mean, look, and Trump did put his hand on the glowing orb too, as well. So that oddly, like, you know, weds him to the Saudis and stuff like that. I mean, the glowing orb is, you know, that will live forever in there.
And then also, I mean, like, doing absolutely nothing when a journalist is, you know, dismembered in a foreign consulate.
Yeah, it was kind of like he took like
like a no fucking brainer. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Another like, oh yeah, totally not surprised. Let me guess, which country is this going to be? Saudi Arabia, UAE. Like, it's, yeah. I mean, like,
yep. It's like you took. It's like basically he took his response to Charlottesville Global. Right? He's like, yeah, there's bad people on both sides. Who knows? Who knows who was right? Who's wrong? The journalist, I heard he had a, you know, he could get a little excitable. You know? So, you know what I mean? He's like, that's the way it was, like, it was just like evasion. You see he's got something that's going on, but yep, refused to come down on it. And now that's actually kind of, you know, coming out of the, you know, what we see in some legislative moves. Like, so for example, you've got Bernie Sanders, right? The Senate resolution basically calling on Trump to cut off aid to the Saudis, right? And to stop, you know, who are basically creating the worst kind of environment or a humanitarian disaster in the world in Yemen. That passed the Senate, right? And there's being more and more push to, in order to stop that stuff from happening. And meanwhile, right, when you just look at let me get to the stuff that's happening in the House. But I mean, that's just beginning to have dividends just in terms of like the pushback in terms of how close Trump has been with the Saudis. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see how that begins to kind of close in around the neck of the Trump family. The other thing we should mention in relation to this week, we also saw the case against Maria Butina. That was the Russian national who was arrested as basically being a kind of foreign operative here in an attempt to influence U.S. politics, particularly through connections with the Republican activist Paul Erickson, who was also her boyfriend, and her work with the NRA.
Now, was she like just like this, like Christian zealot who like drank the Kool-Aid pretty much and was pretty like, or like, what's the best way to describe Butina?
So, look, I think that's part of it. Like, because what happened initially, and I was actually, this was actually really interesting to read. What happened initially is that she was really, being kind of set up as the Red Sparrow, right? There was that movie that came out with what's her face, and like, you know, this highly trained, like, a Russian secret agent to use sex in order to kind of like get their way and undermine like all the stuff. And it turns out that it was not exactly the way it was. So let me read you this. Is coming from the New York Times article on this, and they said prosecutors had already been forced to back off the most salacious accusations against Ms. Butina that she used sex as spycraft, and acknowledged in court filings this week that she generally wanted a graduate degree and she was at American University, and was not simply posing as a student to live in the United States. They also dropped accusations of her being in contact with Russian intelligence agencies, and that she was only using Mr. Erickson to gain access to other influential Americans. So in other words, they're saying that, okay, that whole kind of Red Sparrow garbage that we kind of first came out and said, yeah, not so much. It wasn't exactly like that. It wasn't like she was sent there to do these things and she was from Russian intelligence. She, and this is how they characterize her, quote, she openly advocated Russia-friendly policies and closer connections between her homeland and the United States in speeches and during her time at American University in Washington, where she earned a master's degree. Her cell phone case featured a picture of President Vladimir Putin of Russia riding a horse shirtless, and she frequented Russia House, an upscale Washington bar where Russia hockey stars like Alexander Ovechkin and of the Washington Capitals enjoy vodka and caviar. She made no secret of her desire to help broker a secret meeting with Donald Trump, then candidate, and Mr. Putin during the 2016 election. Right, so she was connected to this, you know, Alexander Torshin. Right, he was a Russian government official. Right, worked closely with Butina, and it was also kind of a direct ties to Putin. So now, again, get yourself outside of the mentality of kind of like the, you know, Cold War political thrillers, put yourself in the mentality of mobs, right? And that's what we got going on here, right? So Putin is known to kind of basically outsource a whole bunch of its operatives. So we know that a lot of, for example, like all the hacking that was taking place was not like directly done by Putin. No, there's this like shop that's organized that's up there. That's the way the mob works, right? The mob works by having these kind of networks and relationships of connections that are not officially connected to you, but are nonetheless part of the organization, right? The fact that Torshin, once it became clear that Butina was actually going to cooperate, right? That she's going to cooperate and dish on this. Torshin suddenly was like resigned of his position, and now he's off like posting pictures about, you know, Kazakhstan and the great food and water there, right? So, and they can't get in touch with, no one can get in touch with him for comment or anything like this, right? So that's how this shit works.
So right? Either he that was, do you think he was killed or he just?
We'll find out. I think, frankly, he's probably a little bit too valuable for them to off him yet. But I think that him being in Kazakhstan was not 100% of his own choice. Let's just put it like that.
You're going on a bit of a vacation.
Right. You know, so, you know, I think that's – so I think Butina, at least from what I'm reading about it, it's more about, okay, look, she had some you know, she loved God and guns, right? And she was like pro-Putin, and she was like of that kind of right-wing contingency within Russia, right? And then she wanted to come to the United States, and I think people saw opportunities in that, especially because she was young, she had red hair, right? That like all the old white guys that saw her coming there thought she was sexy and they wanted to be around her. And I think that people like Torshin recognize that this is a great opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Especially once she, you know, who knows when she started dating the what's his face?
Erickson,
yeah. So I think now what's interesting about that case now is that it's not just her. Right. It's that they're really pointing to Erickson and the NRA. Right. Because it looks like Erickson, there's text messages and emails basically acknowledging that he is setting up a super secret channel. Right. Back channel between Putin and either the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, or people in Trump world. So this is a big issue. And then what's crazy about it is that while it's related to the Mueller thing, it's not Mueller's office that's doing this. I think it's coming out of the D.C., if I have that right, D.C. district or something like this, where this case is being prosecuted. And they said that this is actually related to an ongoing FBI investigation that precedes the Mueller investigation. So which means that they saw some of this stuff that was happening with Erickson and some other kind of Republican operatives and NRA operatives before the Mueller investigation ever got launched. So that's
been in the works for a while.
Yes, this is going to be one to watch, right? Because I think if you're looking for the Russian ties and how that actually worked in practice, this is going to have, I think, an important role to play. So We'll see.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that now we're not just kind of like using kind of, I don't know, sexist tropes of kind of like women spies as a way to understand what's going on, but actually seeing that there's American Republican operatives that were kind of initiating a lot of this agenda. Right. So that's good to see. Cool. Wow. That's a lot. Yeah, so that was, I mean, that kind of happened. The other thing I want to kind of point, I want to go back to, just kind of circle back around a little bit to when I was talking about Bernie Sanders' Senate resolution about the Saudis and cutting off aid to the Saudis in the war against Yemen. What's also, what's interesting in this too as well is that cowardly Paul Ryan this week basically was preventing, was successful in being able to push through a rules change that would prevent any attempt to raise the war powers resolution about kind of like cutting off funding to, for the Yemen and the Saudis. But he stuck it in the farm bill, right? Like on Tuesday, right before a vote, stuck it in a farm bill, right, as a way to do this. So basically, and that farm bill passed, right? The farm bill passed. And despite the fact that there was like 16 or 18 Republicans who defected from that, precisely because they were like, no, this is not appropriate. But thank goodness that they were saved by five Democrats. Five Democrats came forward and said, oh, I'll bail you out.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep. It was pretty nuts. So, and so, yeah, let me see. The five Democrats, here they are. Jim Costa of California, Al Lawson of Florida, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland, and David Scott of Georgia. Right? And when it was hilarious because when they were interviewed afterwards about why they would vote for this, right, prevented this, they're like, I don't know anything about Yemen. Why should Yemen stop the farm bill? Bullshit. Fucking bought and paid for. So if you want your list of people to primary, right, in the next election, there you go. Jim Costa, what's that?
Are they part of the Third Ways Problem Solvers Caucus?
They're part of something. It's a good question. I don't know if they are or not. I don't know. I guess they solved that problem, didn't they? Keep the kids dying in Yemen. That was their rallying point. Keep the kids dying. Keep the kids dying. I mean, seriously, every day they're saying like hundreds of thousands. I mean,
such Jim Costa, hundreds. Yes. Who else?
Jim Costa.
Yep.
Let me get to the list again. Where is it? Jim Costa, Al Lawson of Florida.
I don't see that now.
Colin Peterson of Minnesota.
No.
Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland.
No.
Ruppersberger and David Scott of Georgia.
No, but Jim Costa's on there, so yeah, not surprising.
Well, it's interesting because Jim Costa's name is going to come up again today when we get to talking about Democrats wavering on net neutrality. So, yes, he's front and center once again. So Jim Costa, California, primary target number one as far as today's reporting goes. So,
yeah.
Crazy. So that's going to be something interesting to watch. I mentioned up top, like, just know that as all this crap is going on, right, we're still seeing the kind of, you know, the complete destruction of our environmental policy. As Obama, Obama basically passed, it was a clarification of the Clean Water Act. They put these change in the way that we're kind of figuring out what gets polluting, because there had been corporations that are basically, you know, like oil and gas industry and these kind of big home builders and stuff. They were kind of like trying to say the Clean Water Act did not apply to like small streams. It was only major rivers and stuff. And so there'd been a back and forth and litigation. So basically Obama and his administration clarified this. They know it applies to wetlands and small streams. And that got a bunch of people pissed off, especially oil and gas industry and the coal industry that do like mountaintop removal and the kind of fracking industry that are kind of putting all this, the chemicals into the small streams. That just basically got rolled back. And so now, once again, green light, go on polluting our streams and wetlands. And that's all happening, you know, while nobody's watching, because the rest of the spotlights are so bright that the little spotlight on something like this is just completely drowned out. It's like trying to see a distant star in like when the moon's full. It's nuts, man. Nuts and Nancy. So let me just mention this about the net neutrality. This is, once again, I think this is really important, that Mary Gay Scanlon was basically had a front and center role this week, basically because there's one last ditch attempt, basically, to bring back net neutrality. If you remember, the FCC rolled back its Obama era net neutrality rules, which basically, we should say, the net neutrality rules were basically just a codification of existing practices, right? So the thing was, is that everybody who accesses the internet should kind of, you know, have equal access to it. Whether if you're a small business, if you're a kind of like a little organization like Raging Chicken Press, or if you're a telecom, right? One organization should not have the power to throttle the speed of your internet connection based upon their ownership rules. Now, obviously, Comcast and Verizon and the internet service providers basically wanted this as an what we're pushing to have, you know, control over what speed they delivered content. So basically with Comcast, right, they probably would want to make sure that NBC, and that's NBC, and, you know, that's a was kind of gave you full speed. Why? Because they own NBC. While maybe their competitors over at ABC, you know, to the Disney people, maybe that's going to be a little slower. Right. That kind of stuff. Or if you want to have high speed and you're just an individual, like, you know, a small group like Raging Chicken Press, you could pay to get that premium access. Right. But you're not going to get that at your base rate. So net neutrality is basically no. Internet's free. Everyone gets equal access to this stuff, regardless of where you come into this. Right. And the FCC changed the regulations. Right. Thanks to Ajit Pai. Right. And his giant stupid ass Hershey's or Reese's Pieces cup mug. Basically rolled back those things and basically gave the power over to Comcast. Now, there's one last attempt to basically – so procedures in terms of like congressional oversight of the FCC, they have the ability to overturn these FCC rules, right? The Senate has already voted to approve this. They only need a third of people to sign on to basically call for a vote. It's still unclear whether or not that vote will pass to overturn that or not, but they want to call for the vote. But in order to get the vote in the House, they have to have a majority. Right. So it's 218, right? 218 members or something like that. Or how many? Something like that. They have to have the majority of people in order to kind of to get a vote on whether they should overturn those rules. The problem is right now is that most of the Republicans are going to, you know, side with the you know, big telecoms and things like this, the big money. Not all of them, though. The more libertarian leaning folks may come over to the side, want net neutrality. They were pretty pissed off by this. But there's a bunch of Democrats that who get huge donations from telecom who basically haven't basically said that they're going to vote in order to have a vote. Right. That they weren't actually all behind this. And Mary Gay Scanlon was one of the big ones because her second largest contributor. Right. Is Comcast. Right. And Comcast poured tons of money into her campaign. So she was front and center in an article that was put out by Gizmodo this week. Her picture was on the front cover and all this stuff. And the people for who was it? I'm just spacing their name. Net neutrality activists fight the future. And these folks basically have a page that's called what do I have it there? DemsAgainstThe.net, right? Which lists all the Democrats. Who have basically not signed on, right? Not signed on to want net neutrality and are big recipients of telecom cash. Mary Gay Scanlon was one of them. She first came out and basically said, well, I'm not going to be able to do this. She had a Facebook video this week saying that she had received numerous calls from constituents, but claimed that she was refusing to sign on to the CRA because it is, she said, an arcane congressional maneuver, right? And then as the pressure started coming on, she changed her tune. And now she said she will vote for this. But that still means that we have more Democrats, especially four right here in Pennsylvania, that we can put pressure on. So one, Representative Brandon Boyle. Representative Brandon Boyle got $52,700 from internet service providers. You can call him at 202-225-6111. Right. And tell him that you urge him to vote to allow for a vote on net neutrality. And good old Representative Robert Brady. received $267,550 from ISPs, 202-225-4731. Call him. There's also his Twitter handles. You're going to have a link to that. Then we also have, let's see, Representative Dwight Evans got $36,000 from ISPs. Is that the last one? I think Mary Gay Scanlon may have been the, yeah, she was the fourth. So there's only three left. So we're going to have a link right here in the show notes today that will take you to DemsAgainstThe.net, where you can go and it'll give you links to their phone numbers for the representatives to call them, especially if you're in their district, to call them and urge them that to say that they want a vote to reinstate net neutrality. Right. So there's 16 Democrats total that are helping Trump and Ajit Pai kill net neutrality. You could basically say do not kill net neutrality and allow this vote. Go to DemsAgainstThe.net. Get all the information where you need to call. All right. So there you go. And, you know, the fact that Mary Gay Scanlon kind of reversed course in us shows you that this pressure works if it is targeted and if you know what you're talking about. So. Is that? And last but not least, Chuck and Nancy do the Oval Office. What'd you think of that this week, Sean?
I thought it was, I don't know. I'll give Nancy Pelosi credit.
Yep.
For shutting down Trump in the middle of it, like, yeah.
I just have to say, thank goodness that she took over that conversation because yeah. Chuck Schumer was about to kind of like have an epic fail in front of the cameras.
It's like they didn't prepare for it.
Yeah.
But Pelosi is a lot more maneuverable when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, she like, could think Chuck Schumer's like, I thought we were coming to have a nice conversation. Right. I thought we were just going to have a nice conversation. And like, go there and there's media. And there's
like, she
Trump.
Knew, she, like, they just realized, like, she realized they're getting ambushed right now.
Yeah.
And that she has to go on, like, the offensive right away.
Yep.
Sure, what she did after she realized what was going on.
Yeah, I think she did a good job. I mean, I think that, again, the biggest takeaway. Like, if I'm the takeaway from that, like, I know the Democrats right now are really big. It's like, yes, we were able to say the Trump shutdown, and that's the big takeaway from that. Like, the big takeaway has got to be like, look, put yourself in the look. Trump wants an audience, right? And Trump will kind of like, he'll want to say, yeah, we'll have Chuck and Nancy over. We'll have Chuck and Nancy over. You should go in and plan on using that venue as a public venue to go after this guy. And you should strategize ahead of time because that's how the stuff is going to go down. Because I told you before we went on the show, we went online today, was that I thought that they were going to get owned by Trump in that. Because you could see it the first few minutes, right? The first like 10 minutes or so, maybe not quite that long, but felt like 10 minutes. Trump basically sets it out. We're going to get to the wall. We're going to get the wall. The wall is going to be happening. Border security is going to happen. And then Chuck Schumer said, yeah, but the facts are blah, blah, blah. And Trump's like, yes, border security. Yeah, the wall is an important part of that. We've got to build the wall. And you say that's what the whole setup was. It was going to put them and make them look weak and make them look like they were kind of like on the defensive, which they started out looking like that until, you know, that moment. I think that Trump started characterizing what Nancy Pelosi would say. What Nancy said, Nancy would have to. I recognize she's in a different position. And she's like, oh, no, that's it. We're done. And then she went out and took the offensive and kind of regained control of that space. So, you know, the media was very big about, whoa, look at the dynamics, the drama that don't happen. For me, I think there's a lesson in there for Democrats that you got to be prepared to publicly take on this guy. And you have to strategize what to do. What do you want to come out of that? And it's not just a key talking point. It has to be, you always should be prepared to articulate a policy and an agenda in those spaces, right? And force to him to play defense. Because you know what's going to happen then. You're going to be able to reverse the dynamic where then he's going to go to Twitter and he's going to attack you all, but he's going to attack you for your policy, right? So it's not just about characterizing Trump. It's about taking the initiative, right? Everybody needs to take, you know, like take the lesson from AOC right now, right? About, you know, what you're going to do. And I think that came out like for Joshua Green tweeted out this week. He was out in the D.C. Trump Hotel for a meeting of these like GOP bigwigs and political operatives and stuff. And he said, you know, this was like in the light of what happened with Chuck and Nancy. And there's all these indictments coming down. And he's like, yeah, walking on around for a few hours here, you'd think that people would be talking about all these stuff. Nope. They were more concerned with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez than anyone else. right? They were talking about her because they're freaking scared of her.
AOC is the ultimate trigger.
She is. They need their safe space, so they went to the DC Trump Hotel.
She's the ultimate trigger for them. Yeah. She's a millennial. She is working class. She is a woman and a woman of color.
Yep.
Who's very smart.
Yep.
And she ain't taking she ain't playing by your rules.
No.
And no, I mean, like, she is like their worst trigger. They hate empowered women of color who are smart. Like, and
ding,
she
ding, ding,
just
ding, ding. Yep.
Hits all the fucking check boxes.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
I mean, like, no, I mean, like, they are a party of white identity politics, and they absolutely hate the fact that there are rising women of color within the Democratic Party who are going to kick their ass pretty much.
Yeah.
Oman, Tlaib, AOC, like.
There you go.
They know it's coming.
Exactly. Freaking awesome. Well, yeah. I have to say, you know, the one thing I never thought I would say this, Sean, but after a week like this, especially after what's happened in the Mueller investigations, I never thought that I could say that Jeff Sessions would be newly relevant to these conversations. So let's just do the rundown a little bit here. So, hey, Michael Cohen, what's up?
You're going to the jail. That's a felony also.
Hey, Robert Mueller.
You're going to the jail.
Hey, Trump. Trump.
You're going to the jail. That's a felony also.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the return of Jeff Sessions to our soundboard.
You're going to the jail.
I think that's a good place to wind the segment up as any. Once again, Jeff Sessions.
That's
everybody.
A felony also.
All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you to become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress. We'll be right back after this with yet more.
You're going to the jail.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1990. That was the day that 20,000 workers in the city of Fez, in the North African country of Morocco, went out on strike. Austerity measures had hit the country's working people hard during the 1980s. A drought had made the situation even worse. Unemployment rates for those under 21 had soared to higher than 30%. Two labor unions, the General Workers' Trade Union and the Democratic Confederation of Labor, called for a general strike. Government officials agreed to meet with the unions to discuss their demands. But the government would not agree to specific wage increases. Plans for the general strike moved forward. It is estimated that more than half of the Fez workforce participated in the general strike. Large numbers of workers in other Moroccan cities also participated in the action. In Fez, bus drivers showed their solidarity by joining the strike. In response, the government attempted to keep bus service going by putting police and soldiers behind the wheel. This angered many of the young demonstrators, and some threw stones at the scab drivers. Armed forces clashed violently with the strikers. The government claimed the strikers started the violence. The protesters pointed toward the police. A fire was started at the five-star Hotel Mirandes in Fez. Other symbols of wealth, such as limousines, car dealerships, and banks, were also damaged. After the 24-day strike, Moroccan officials claimed that two demonstrators had been killed. But human rights groups disputed that number and said 33 had been killed. Many more were injured. Hundreds were arrested. After the strike, the government agreed to raise wages by 15%. Many protesters were tried for their participation in the demonstrations. Some received prison sentences as long as 10 years. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's our PA focus. PA, Pennsylvania focus. I have to admit, like right up top, everybody, that I said, I've been kind of in a grading hole. And so while it's pretty easy to kind of like put on my podcast and stay abreast of what's happening nationwide, I have been a little lax when it comes to Pennsylvania. So, I know, but good thing is that Sean at least had one ear to the ground this week, so we've got some things that are going on. So Sean, so take us through a couple of the stories of the week.
So I have just been like, you know, just still enjoying the break between, I'm getting ready for the new session to start next. In the next couple of weeks, on January 1st. So, you know, I've been busy. One of the things I think we've been talking about for a while, since before the election, was the issue with happening out in Pittsburgh with Lindsey Williams. And, you know, we were actually probably one of the first people to talk about, at least privately, you know, the Republicans are probably not going to try, like, not to seat her. Mm-hmm. Like, we had these conversations, like, over a month ago, like, when this story was coming out. And, the Post Gazette told him to let it go. Just let it go.
Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they put out a pretty strong worded op-ed, and pretty much they ended it saying that, like, this fight going on with the Republican leadership represents serious erosion, not only of good faith, but the stability of our democracy. I mean, like,
that's something.
Yeah. And that's what we're getting at with this story now. You know, Will Bunch put out a column, you know, going after the same thing as Democratic, this attack on the, you know, literally democracy. And they're really just doing it for a technicality. Which is the worst part, which is like the not also surprising part about this.
Right. And, you know, again, this would be the thing, you know, we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording today, too, as well. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, like, the Pennsylvania Democrats should be digging in for a battle on this. Right. This is like the opportunity to take the offensive in the state and kind of show what they've been doing. I mean, look. This is the Republican Party that has basically gerrymandered the state in such a way that, you know, you can get the vast majority of votes in the state and still end up being in the minority in the state house. Right. So you've got to be in a position where you're going to see this as an attack on voter rights. You have to see this as an attack on democratic process. And you have to see this as an attack, again, as the Post-Gazette said, right, the stability of our democracy. And if you start from that position, you are in a much better place than, you know, trying to maybe, I don't know, think maybe we should horse trade behind the scenes so this all goes away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying. And the first thing you have to be out there saying is, like, exactly, this is an attack on democracy. Like, this is an attack on voter rights. I mean, if you're so worried about the Constitution being an issue here, I mean, this is the party that passed voter ID. This has passed the unconstitutional charter school stuff, going after Act 13, going after these congressional gerrymandered maps. I mean, like, everything major legislative policy piece that Republicans have managed to put out in the past 10 years has been ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Courts.
Yep.
I mean, in this decade alone, since Corbett was in office.
Absolutely.
And they are using this, like, small technicality to say that that she is fast and loose with the democracy. Like, that's what the Republican Party said this week.
There you go.
I mean, just like, here you have this woman who won 35 years old, and, you know, you're saying she's fast and loose with the Constitution. Like, that is one of the most, like, sexist, blatant, like, sexist attacks I've seen. Like, and they're proud about this.
Yep.
Like, they put it on Twitter. Like,
yeah, they're basically like, yeah, she's basically like a candidate whore. Right? I mean, that's basically what they're saying. right?
Yeah.
I mean, she sleeps around. I mean, she, like, plays fast and loose with the Constitution, right? I mean, this is, I mean, yeah, that component to kind of what they're doing. And, of course, it's part and parcel for the Democratic Party. I mean, for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
So, crazy, man. Crazy. So, that's, again, something. So, what's your sense of where this is going?
I'm hearing that people think that the Republicans are doing this to rile up their base and to horse trade, and that they're not actually going to go through with this, like that they will see her on January 1st. But, you know, people behind the scenes within the, especially activists and all, are planning to start getting riled up if, you know, to be there on January 1st.
They should. I'm telling you, we should do this now. I mean, the state Democratic Party should be, I mean, they should be.
And there's a bunch of other Democratic senators.
So what's that?
Democratic senators. There are a couple of Democratic senators, you know, threatening to, like, say, like, listen, we're not going to deal with this if she's not, like. There might be some actions if she's not seated on January 1st.
Well, I mean, they should have, I mean, that should be in the plans right now. I mean, that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I hope to God that that's going to go on.
Yeah.
Because they should be showing up at these people's office, like offices.
Or just walk off the floor, like.
Yeah, that, I mean, they could do that as a party, but then they're also activists kind of like putting pressure on them and just put the spotlight on them. We've learned, that's one thing that we've learned, I think, pretty extensively all throughout this kind of Trump era, is that, you know, these Republicans do not like it when they get forced to deal in public. They don't like it, with the exception of, like, people who are too stupid to understand what they're doing, like you know, like our good friend
Daryl Metcalf.
But that you want to put that kind of public pressure on and expose what's happening to light of day. These people win when they can operate in the kind of dark corners of the Capitol.
Yeah, and it's also like these people, like, we'll say it before and I'll say it again. You know, the group associated with the Commonwealth Foundation, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund, they spent $393,000 on her opponent, Jeremy Schaefer, either through campaign donations or through independent expenditures.
Yep.
And these are associated, like, with the same money groups, the same donor bases as the organizations that are attacking, you know, democracy outright in Michigan and Wisconsin. Like, you can't say that the Commonwealth Leaders Fund or the Commonwealth Foundation are actively behind us right now, like,
right,
doing this. But they dumped like $400,000 into this race. You know, Matt Briey, who is the treasurer for this group, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund, who was the president of the Commonwealth Foundation, who is now gone. You know, like the Betsy DeVos, like the Commonwealth Leaders Fund was funded by, you know, people from the Commonwealth Foundation, other like business magnates around the state. And then also the Students First gave them $2.75 million, you know, like, which is a Betsy DeVos funded hedge fund managed charter school group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, like, this is who dumped money into this race.
Exactly.
Like, it's the DeVos's, the charter school groups, the anti-union groups. And I mean, like, it's not surprising they're making this an issue.
There you go. There you go. So this is kind of really important. And I just wanted to remind everybody too, as well, is like, you know, Lindsay Williams, you know, she's just not some rando candidate either. I mean, Lindsay Williams is a really solid progressive candidate.
Yeah.
You know, that she's, you know, again,
she was fired from her job, for forming Union National Whistleblower Center. She worked for the Teamsters afterwards, and she then moved back up to Pennsylvania to be an organizer with the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so she's been a union organizer for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, and let's remember, during her campaign, too, as well, is that you had her opponent, like Jeremy Schaefer, right, basically targeted her as, like, with all sorts of with ads that basically had an actor in Soviet garb and signs and basically labeled her a socialist and was trying to do the whole red baiting stuff. And at the same time, as Lindsay Williams actively sought the endorsement of DSA out there in Pittsburgh. Now, she didn't get the endorsement. I guess it was a fairly close vote, from my understanding. But she has aligned herself himself with labor, with progressive, right, and has not had an issue with asking for kind of the endorsements of groups like the DSA. That's really important.
Yeah, I know. So. I mean, they're pissed that their guy lost the seat in the primary in Randy Volokovich, a well-liked Republican, and like they're now super pissed that they lost the race to that the race went blue.
Right.
A race that was supposed to stay Republican for decades.
Yep.
Became a Democratic seat that they draw on intentionally with the gerrymanders and stuff like that.
There you go. And then we also got news this week from Elizabeth Fiedler.
Well, I was going to say there's going to be a special election happening out in Western PA. Guy Ravinsall became a congressman from out there. He was a Republican Senate in this district, like right next to Lindsey Whalen's district. That's a Hillary Clinton district that like went 3 or 4 points for Clinton. So there's going to be a contested Senate race happening out in right next to Lindsey Whalen's district.
Nice.
So there might be two special. I mean, like, that's the thing.
You heard it here. That's it. You know. Yeah. So take that.
Fuck you.
Put that in your pipe and smoke
well,
it,
no,
people.
I mean, like, there's going to be repercussions if you choose not to seat Lindsey Whalen's.
Yes.
And you're going to piss off a bunch of people in that region.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's see. So then we also got some news from Elizabeth Fiedler this week.
Yes, we do.
Do tell.
She introduced Fair Work Week legislation that recently passed in Philadelphia City Council. She said she's going to introduce that legislation, a packet of bills, sometime next year. And that she wants to work on that. Obviously, it's going to be an uphill battle with the Republicans. But, I mean, these young freshman Democrats, you know, they're coming into the state house, so they're not going to be quiet and sit back on things. So it's good to see them taking a step.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is the perfect example of, like, yes, it's going to be an uphill battle. You don't let the uphill battle, right, determine what you do, right? This is like out of the gates, the fact that she's coming forward and basically saying, look, we just won this in Philadelphia, right? Everyone in Pennsylvania deserves this, and now we're going to advocate for this for workers across the state, right? And saying, like, look, you know.
And it's coming from a DSA-elected candidate.
Exactly. And, like, this is where saying, like, you know, like, so naysayers be damned, right? Democratic machine politic people be damned. We're going to start pushing this and start setting the agenda. Because if this kind of stuff never gets out there and gets advocated for and pushed, then people don't even know that it's out there.
It never happens.
Right. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if anything, we see at the national level, you have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, as, you know, the most visible example, right, of what it means to start pushing an agenda. I mean, whenever have we been taught that we were talking about a Green New Deal? Right. Until she started kind of pushing it. It's not that people haven't been advocating it before, but it's been, you know, happening on the margins of. She brought that front and center.
And right? Look how, like, someone like her changed the Overton window on that.
Totally. Like overnight, practically.
Yeah. Like shifted it so far to the left, like in an insane amount of time.
Right. You think about, like, the Green New Deal. So the question is, like, the Green New, like, now there's articles that are coming out, right, that the argument is not over whether or not we should have a Green New Deal, but whether or not that we should, like, to what degree we allow corporate interest to determine what that looks like. I mean, what? I mean, that's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. And I think that what we see here with Elizabeth Fiedler coming out with this co-sponsorship memo for a Fair Work Week for across the state, it's the same kind of push. And I hope we're going to see that from Summer Lee, and I hope we're going to see that from Sarah Inamorato as well.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, frankly, Lindsey Williams, I'm going to add her in there because I think, you know, for her coming in with battle-tested right here is all the better.
And yeah, I mean, like, there's so many different, like, ways to look at this, but.
So you got anything else more on this one?
No, I am. No, I was looking at something else.
Wait, hold on a second. I got something in my Twitter feed. Hold on. Just a little. Okay, no.
Go ahead. No, I mean, it's good that we're getting involved with this stuff like early.
Exactly. So here's, and then that's a good segue how I want to kind of close out today's very short, abbreviated Pennsylvania Focus. So listen, one of the things I mentioned in the podcast last week is that one of the things you're looking at what to do going forward with Raging Chicken Press, and what we're going to, you know, some new potential initiatives and so on. And, you know, because frankly, look, I mean, Sean does an amazing job uncovering stuff that nobody else is reporting on out there in Harrisburg. But frankly, he can't do it alone. We need more people doing this stuff. And what I would really, really love to have at this point is someone that'd be willing to be dedicated toward kind of reporting on and following and building context with Elizabeth Fiedler, Summer Lee, Sarah Inamorato, and we'll add Lindsay Williams on this, as kind of like a beat. Right. Because I think that what we need to be able to do is we need to be able to kind of keep following what they're doing as a way of putting them in the spotlight within progressive communities. But at the same time, to making sure that the progressive community is aware of what they're doing. Right. So we always know that when you're electing someone to public office, you know, politicians will make particular kinds of promises. And you want to make sure the movement is going to help them make the right choices. Right. Because if they start to feel like they're isolated and there's nobody around anymore and everybody went home after the elections and nobody's interested anymore, then they're going to be kind of influenced by what's happening inside Harrisburg. So we want to make sure the movement is still there. And frankly, I have strong confidence that the movements that have emerged are going to be there. So I'm not so worried about that part. But I also think that we need to make sure that we're constantly giving them a voice. And I want to make sure that they're getting reported on. Been toying with some ideas about when to bring them on podcasts for special podcasts and interviews and things like this, but really wanting someone to be kind of making contact on a fairly consistent basis with that, especially the DSA supported candidates that are now in our state house, but also people like Lindsay Williams and other kind of real progressives, left leaning folks in there, that we need to give them those kind of platforms. And that is the kind of thing, frankly, that Raging Chicken Press has been built to do. So if you're that kind of person that you want to give a shot at that, please email me at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. Email me there and let me know a little bit about your background. Let me know about kind of stuff you've been reading, writing in the past before, or just your investment in doing this work. And we can start a conversation about covering these folks, because I think that would be really, really important. We need to build stuff out, right? I don't think there's any way forward other than kind of building things out. We've got a very short window in order to do this. We've got a short window in order to do this, in part because 2020 is coming up really quickly. And if we want to be able to kind of be a strong presence and a continued presence in the state, we have to build out the people that are covering what's going on in Pennsylvania. So that's my pitch to all of you who are out there listening today. If you want to, or you know of other people who want to, you just kind of remember – shoot me an email, ragingchickenpress@gmail.com, and we can start talking. So anything else in Pennsylvania today, Sean?
Nope. Nothing really else going on.
Nope. Just
there's stuff going on probably, but
not within your window.
I mean, like, well, I'm watching what legislation's getting introduced and stuff like that, what co-sponsors are going around. So it's starting to buzz back up.
Yeah. I mean, this time of year is always kind of a little bit in this, like, this whole kind of stuff.
It's a holding pattern almost.
Well, sort of, right? I mean, it's a holding pattern in part, but I think that, you know, especially a week like this, when, like, national news has so dominated, like, attention, that it's, at least my attention too, as well, limited attention I've had this week, it's easy to kind of, like, not remember, hey, there's a lot of shit that's going on right here in Pennsylvania that we should be focusing on, but,
I really think the main story to be focusing on is what's happening with Lindsay Williams and making sure that she gets seated on January 1st, because this would just be a really unforced power grab. This is just a power grab from Republicans.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it.
I mean, like, how are they going to act if they lose more seats in 2020 and 2022? So no, this is a precursor to that.
Yeah, and I think that it's a good place to begin to assume they're going to act like they've always acted, right? I mean, like, yeah. And it'll embolden them further.
Yeah, there was no condemnation from anyone when the Democrat, when the Republicans were proposing to impeach over the gerrymandering decision, over the Fair Districts case, there was no condemnation when Pat Toomey endorsed doing this back in the spring, summertime.
Right.
I mean, like this. Yeah, I mean, they've been getting away with it. They were getting more emboldened. And now, like, they're threatening not to seat someone.
Yep. There we have it. Nothing but joy.
This is
man.
A progression.
Nothing but joy.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. That's just going to wrap it up for here. We'll be back just in a few minutes with today's last call. A little space news, a little beer news. Who knows what else we'll come up with. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
You're going to the jail.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Space Force. According to Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, Space Force is now in its, and I swear he used this words, final approach. So pretty much the clock is ticking down on the proposal for the Space Force, which Mike Pence has been tapped by President Trump to ensure, oversee the creation of the Space Force. And basically, at this meeting of a bunch of kind of corporate executives and all this kind of stuff, people, of course, had to ask about the Space Force. And it looks like, excuse me, it looks like the Shanahan was a little bit like, okay, you're going to make me talk about this. And basically said that they're in the final throes. They kind of one or two different approaches, and then they're going to be releasing it. And apparently, as early as today, it's the final proposal is going to be moved and being shopped around in the White House circles, and potentially on Capitol Hill, and put forward. And the reporting has it at this point that they're. So Pence has been in charge by implementing President Trump's directive to stand up a Space Force by fiscal year 2020. So that was the order. So by 2020, which means that there's going to have to be a budgetary request in order to establish this stuff by 2020. So look for it, man. The Space Force is it's getting its wings, man. It's getting it with
so I like to say that to me, like since like Infrastructure Week has lost really its meaning.
Yes.
And like it's sort of like dull and boring. I think that like Space Force is the new Infrastructure Week for this administration.
Space Force,
like they start humming Space Force like that song when like Mueller investigation drops. Hey, And they're probably just like, all right, when's the next Space Force story coming out? Okay, let's talk about Space Force for the next 2 hours.
Well, I'm like, personally...
Like, completely ignore the elephant in the room. Yeah, I don't care about the investigation. What the fuck's happening with Space Force?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, like, I would say, like, I've said to you before, too, as well, is, like, I think there's more to the Space Force than... I think, like I said, when the reason why we're talking about Space Force at all is because Trump opened his pie hole one day and the word Space Force came out. And then he was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. That sounds like a movie. That sounds like something. And then he actually got some applause by it, which he misread as approval, which was actually just like hilarity, right? You know, thought that he was making a joke. But... he's been staying on it. And Mike Pence is like, you know, like I said before, is like, he's like the space porn guy, right? Who basically thinks like, you know, like space is like, you know, getting
it's
close.
It keeps him alive.
It's getting closer to God. And you, I mean, like, you got to get to the moon so that you can get closer to God. You see, that's
exactly
what
it is. So do you think that like, that's what Mike Pence was thinking about?
During the Oval Office thing?
Dude. With like the meeting that was going on, he's just thinking about Space Force the whole time. Man, I cannot wait for this Space Force proposal to come out because, yeah, like, I really don't care what the hell is happening right in front of me right now.
He's like, if people have not seen the video of that whole like Oval Office showdown, just like watch it for just watch Mike Pence. Right, you can have the sound off too. Just watch Mike Pence. He looks like somebody turned him off in the corner. And he's like, looks like he's got his eyes like in prayer or something at one point. But maybe that was it. Maybe it was like, Lord, let me hold on long enough to see the Space Force a reality. Lord, I want to go to the moon. I want to get closer to you. Right. Just me and my wife, no other women, just men, just white men, white like the moon, white.
Living in a totally straight colony.
Right, exactly. But I do have to say, is like, I think is going to happen. I mean, again, this is my my beating the dead horse. Why I even talk about space news, other than the fact that I just think space is cool. It's because this is going to be the next play, the next big capitalist play, and this is galactic capitalism. And what has happened, if you follow the industry at all, as I kind of do because I geek out on the stuff. Over the past several years, is like there's been these really interesting developments, but they've been scattered all over the place. I mean, they're really taking place in these small trade shows and stuff where, you know, there's all these kind of initiatives really big in Silicon Valley where there's some kind of like, you know, people with basically billions of dollars to kick around and basically, you know, the angel investors and all this other kind of stuff want to get behind some of this stuff. What Space Force has done and having Mike Pence in the Oval Office and in the White House has done is has helped again, focus some of these people around tangible goals. So on the one hand has been the kind of corporatization, the privatization of the space industry that began under Obama, right? When Obama shut down the space shuttle and basically said, we're going to go to kind of like corporations for our solutions, and the Russians went for that too. That was step one. Step two is now consolidating it and thinking about this in a military thing. Why does that matter? Look, probably what's going to happen, my guess, is that the Pentagon actually is at least hinting that what they'd rather do is establish the Space Force within the existing structure. So like as a division of the Air Force, right? Because there's also a Space Command thing that's already in the Air Force, but make it more robust. What does that mean? That means more money going into the military, which means military contractors, the people that will be responsible for building this stuff, see this as a profit opportunity. That's really the game going on. So the game going on is like finding a way to publicly subsidize, right, the private space industry. That's what's happening. So there you go. And, you know, they'll do it through the military, and which means that it's going to be like, you know,
Northrop Grumman.
Right, exactly. Lockheed Martin, yes. Right? Boeing, right across the board. So that's what we can look at. So, but I'm just fascinated by it too as well. There's other little advances this week. Virgin Galactic, like Richard Branson, you know, the head of Virgin. Virgin Galactic is their attempt to do space stuff. They've approached it differently than SpaceX. Basically, they want space tourism. So they've been working on these kind of like, I don't know what you'd call them, these hybrid things. They get launched, their ships that get launched from a big plane and then use a rocket to kind of enter kind of like low Earth orbit or kind of near space. And they just had Spaceship One was already kind of in the works, but Spaceship Two was the one that they did this week. And basically it got to the edge of space, and Richard Branson was by kind of out in front again, basically saying, okay, that they're going to be launching space tourism pretty soon. So this is, again, sounds like fiction. It's going to happen relatively quickly as you see this going on. And I think that people are going to be making these power grabs and money grabs right now. So we'll see. Pence is also heading out to Cape Canaveral this week for Tuesday to launch a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. It's going to carry the Air Force first ever GPS-3 satellite, which will be used to help guide missiles. Yep. But that's going up. So Pence, of course, wants to be there for that. Hopefully he's going to be a little bit more animated than he was in the Oval Office, or maybe not. I don't know, man. Maybe that'll be his thing from now on, which would be kind of fun. And my last bit of space news this week, I should have talked about this a long time ago, but there was a huge gap, so I never knew if they were going to come back or how it was going to go. But National Geographic, it must have been a year and a half ago now, I think. They came out with a series called Mars, right? And I, to be honest with you, had no idea it was coming out whatsoever. I was on a plane to Portland, Oregon for a conference, and they had like one of those TVs embedded in the back seats, and you could watch online, like in-flight content or whatever. And one of them was this National Geographic series on Mars. And I looked at it, I read the description of it, I said, oh, I'll give it a shot. And it's excellent. And what they've done is basically tried to ground the trips to Mars, right? Or, you know, the colonization of Mars, a landing of Mars, first human on Mars, in kind of current historical context. So it has this kind of like documentary feel to part of it. So they actually have interviewed a bunch of scientists and people at NASA and things actually for this show who are currently working on very real things. Right. And they get embedded into the story, into the fictional story. They get embedded into the story as kind of like flashbacks to these moments within the development of this this program to Mars. And then you're kind of flashing forward to this this first crew that's going to set up on Mars. And what's fascinating about it is that in this season, they brought season two back this year, which I didn't ever knew if it was going to come back or not. But they brought it back this year. And now they're starting to get into it's overtly political, but I mean, it's, I don't know if it's meant to be that way, but it's talking about like corporate influence and corporate power in the colonization of Mars. So in this latest episode, episode 5, there's this kind of like, you know, now intergalactic or interplanetary corporation has all sorts of power. And they basically set up a presence on Mars. And now you're starting to see what the influence of that looks like. And so I'm keep on thinking in my head, like, man, this is like the British East India Company, right? They're using that as that kind of model when you actually hand over colonization projects or space exploration to private interest. So it's just kind of a really cool show, extraordinarily well done. The fictional side of it, the story about that's taking place in the future, is as well done as the documentary part of it. So check it out. You can check it out. It's National Geographic's Mars. If you get that on your cable stations, you can check some of the stuff out online. I'm not sure if you need a subscription if you don't have cable and stuff, but what it is. Well, pretty cool stuff. That's my recommendation for the week when it comes to our space news, Mars. And start with season one. Start with season one and then right through. It's only, I think, 6, 7, maybe 8 episodes, and then you could pick up on season two. That's what I got, Sean, for space news. Yeah, there you go. Sean, give me a look at it. I thought it was a good sequence this week. I mean, come on, man, from Space Force to, like, you know, TV. Come on, man.
Everything, yeah.
Look at that. A little bit of everything for everybody. Any kind of cool stuff, news you got going on for the week or fun stuff that you're going to be doing?
Guys, I sound like I'm so boring. I've just been wrapping up Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like one of the first holidays I'll be home like for a considerable amount of time. So
yeah.
Looking forward to it.
You, how long are you coming home for?
I'm probably just going to stay home for a few days. Like, what do you mean, like not wearing half the work like on Christmas Eve or stuff like that.
Yeah, this is the first Christmas in a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that? Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess maybe we'll, I'm sure that you'll be able to find Sean down at Forest in Maine for a good chunk of those times when he's not babysitting, right?
Hopefully not babysitting.
Hanging out with the little ones. Yeah. Well, I don't know. You got to put in your time, man. You got to put in your time. So, all right. So I got Free Will News of the Week at Free Will Brewery. It's a big, big weekend moving into the holidays over at Free Will. They've got a triple can release this week. They've got the Cosmic Warp Machine, the Chocolate Hazelnut COB, which is a coffee oatmeal brown stout, or oatmeal brown, and a vanilla COB. That will all be released on Saturday. Also on Saturday, that's tomorrow, if you're listening to this podcast today, on Friday, that they have the all-day Christmas dinner from 12 to 8 on Saturday, and featuring food by Trey Locally Sourced. And this is, you remember, this is one of the food trucks that they have there on a fairly regular basis. And then on Sunday, it's beer and breakfast with Santa from 11:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. And Down to Earth Cafe is going to be serving their brunch menu. And remember, Down to Earth Cafe, that's all the food now from the new Bread Box and Bakery with their new location on the corner of what? Market and 7th in Perkasie. But so they're going to have all their food there, and then you'll get see Santa Claus for the little ones. Grab yourself some new cans for their beer release. Have some fun. If you're not wanting to hang out there too much, you want to stop by, pick up some beer, whatever, remember, they are also collecting new blankets. New blankets, not used blankets, but new blankets for Tender Hearts Incorporated. And that's to help people in need to keep warm this winter. You can drop off your donation at the brewery. So that's my Free Will News of the Week, everybody. Anything new in the Twitter feed, Sean?
Do you know what today represents?
I do not.
The 10-year anniversary of.
I do not.
In random news.
Rando news? Nope.
Today is the day that happened when the Iraqi journalist threw his shoe at George W. Bush.
No way. That was today?
10 years ago, yes.
Oh, my God. How do I not have that like marked on a calendar someplace? 12-14. 12-14. What year was it?
2018.
No. Oh, 2008 must have been 10-year anniversary.
2008, yeah, 2008.
Hey, sorry. 10-year.
Cool. Right before Obama became president.
There you go. How about that? The shoe throwing episode. That had to be one of my favorite moments in the George Bush administration. I have to say, I was like, I remember saying like out loud, like, "Oh my God!" He threw a shoe at him. Yeah. And then, of course, cable news like spent the next like 3 days talking about like nonstop around the clock what the shoe meant and all. Blah,
blah, blah. He threw both shoes, not just one.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If he had 3 feet, more would have come. Well, cool. All right, everybody. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, signing off here as we get closer and closer to yet more holidays. We move out of Hanukkah and into the Christmas and New Year's and Kwanzaa seasons. Wish everybody safety stuff. We're supposed to be getting a little maybe mixed precipitation here today, but mostly rain's coming. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for some snow. But we'll see.
So I have a rolling bet that's going on.
Rolling bet.
What will come down first? The Christmas tree on the state capitol?
Or Donald Trump?
Or the vinyl wrap from Scott Wagner's campaign office that is still on his State Street office building?
Oh, definitely the Christmas tree will come down first.
So what happens first? Wolf's inauguration? Or the vinyl wrap coming down?
That's a tougher one.
I mean, I'm surprised they haven't taken it off yet.
I think the inauguration will come first. I think he'll take it down before the inauguration. But that means so the Christmas tree's got... Wait, when's the inauguration?
14th or the 15th.
So that means the tree's got to come down...
Yeah.
When does a tree normally come down?
Probably like the week after Christmas.
So I think the tree definitely comes down first, but I think the vinyl wrap comes off before the inauguration.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to put my bets. Do you got a chart or something that you're keeping, or are you just like?
I'm just still mystified that this thing is still on the fucking Windows.
Oh man.
I mean, I walk by the office every few days just to see if it's still there.
Well, he better be careful because that might be some violation of some funds or some sort of rules or something.
You're going to the jail.
That might be reserved for him too as well.
It's also a felony.
Oh, yes, it is.
That's a felony also.
Well, good. Well, hey, everybody. We're wrapping this week up with a little Chewbacca. Remind everybody, if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RCPress today. We'll see you next week as we approach Christmas. Oh, Sean. See ya!